Rob Morphy is one of the three men behind AmericanMonsters.com. It's a website which hopes to be a place where researchers and amateur investigators into cryptozoology, naturalists, scientists of any type, can come together and clear their information with each other so that everybody can kind of find out a little faster, perhaps even instantaneously, what's being discovered around the world, looking for incontrovertible proof of the existence of some of these animals or mammals that have defied capture and inspire the imagination. We've been talking about a bunch of them, both the sea monster and the lake monster variety, and some terrestrial objects which just seem absolutely otherworldly. These creatures that run around, maybe Bigfoot, maybe devil monkeys, maybe other types of hominids. And in fact, it kind of opens up the whole world of possibilities for you too. And if you have experienced something, if you've got a photograph, AmericanMonsters.com wants to post it in their gallery and get your story. Perhaps you don't have a photograph. Perhaps you just have an encounter, a question, and find out whether anybody else has ever seen what you saw once or gathered any evidence on something which you might have some trace of. And physical evidence is a great place to start when we're looking to find out what is really at the bottom of many of these mysteries. You can look out and find out more at AmericanMonsters.com. We'll come back with Rob Morphy and your calls next on Coast to Coast AM. My name's Ian Punnett. Rob Morphy of AmericanMonsters.com, you never did tell us, though, whether you found the creature you were looking for in the bayous of Louisiana.
Well, you know, we didn't find the creature, but we had a hell of a good time looking. And just capturing the eyewitness reports and on video and just helping to illuminate the legend, that was really our purpose from square one.
Yep.
The chances of finding one of these animals on an expedition or a pursuit like this is pretty, you know, thin. But if you can help illuminate it and bring out evidence to give to other researchers, then you've had a pretty successful expedition.
That's pretty brave of you guys to be paddling around in the middle of the night in a swamp somewhere with hungry gators around.
Well, it's funny because, you know, I fancy us fairly logical guys, but somehow when you're in the field, you just get this sense of wild abandonment. It's sort of like this Hemingway sensation comes over you. And next thing you know, you find yourself dangling off the side of a boat in the dead of night with your elbows tracing past gators. In my day life, I'd be like, that's just ridiculous.
Right.
There's no way. But when you're there in the field and you kind of get that excitement going and you haven't shaved in 3 weeks or showered in half that time, it's a completely different character that takes over.
Have you ever gotten anybody that's ever sent in a photo to you of a Cabot?
No, I have not.
Half cat, half rabbit. I ran into this a couple of years ago, and I can't remember where, but somebody actually sent me an old Polaroid photo of what they claimed was a Cabot, and it had been something that they had discovered on their property. I forget where it was. But there was an actual photograph of this thing, and it looked a lot more like a rabbit than a cat, but it had distinct cat-like features, including much shorter ears than a rabbit, but big haunches, which it hopped around on. And the only reason I brought it up to you is that somebody mentioned this to me the other day, that they thought they were just sort of jokingly talking about having seen this very unusual cat, which hopped as opposed to ran. And I mentioned whether it was a Cabot. I said, have you ever heard of that? And they said, no. And I thought, well, you know, it's been a long time since I've heard of that. And I just don't know whether anybody else has ever come across that or whether that's popped up. Well, we'll find out on the phones. Let's find out what is out there for AmericanMonsters.com, Rob Morphy. And we'll go to the wild card line. We'll start with Rick on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Rick.
Yeah.
You're talking to Rob.
All right. You guys, I love the show, and tonight's show is just one of the best, as always.
It's good,
like sitting
you
down with it's like sitting with a group of old friends having a conference every night.
Good. Glad to have you out there.
I was wondering if you were familiar, like on the internet, I have researched like the Thunderbird and also other featherless giant birds. But here in Roanoke, Virginia, mainly around the Roanoke River that runs through the state, there's always been a story about a large pink-skinned bird, no feathers, no hair, just it had like a 15 to 18 foot wingspan, and it's always seen around the river, usually by kids and fishermen, that sort of thing. I have heard of similar creatures in other areas, but not in the states or in Virginia.
Well, let me ask you. Yeah, Rob, what do you know about that? You've got some pictures of Thunderbirds on the website, don't you?
Yeah, they're definitely in the Avian Anomaly gallery, and also in our article section. There are certainly articles about creatures like that. I have not heard of this one. Has it been seen flying?
Yes, it's been seen flying. As a matter of fact, well, the Roanoke River, it comes through Virginia, through the Blue Ridge Mountains, Shenandoah Valley, and eventually to the ocean. And it's sort of a story from, all along the riverways of it. And if you see it approaching you, sometimes it approaches from such a height that I guess the lights of the city or something is reflected off of its skin. And it almost looks like a little pin of light. And eventually, as it's closer, you see the bird itself. Hmm. And it doesn't have a head like a pterodactyl or anything. It's just like a giant featherless bird.
Which makes you wonder how it flies and or navigates without it. I mean, it featherless bird would put it into like the giant bat category of some sort. Okay. And then or perhaps some giant flying squirrel. Or large, something that would look that way. Any thoughts about what the head is supposed to look like? And does it have a large beak, which would distinguish it from a bat?
Okay, yes, it has a beak. Its head's bird-shaped. I would say more like a woodpecker bird with no feathers and the pink skin. And it's stories of it being seen walking on the ground underneath trees, stories of it being in these large oak trees, and it was supposedly like closes its wings in and almost looks like a bat, but no one's ever said if it stays upside down or anything. But also the thing about occasionally coming from such an incredible height, that it just looks like something reflecting light until it's much closer to you, like it comes from such a height. And a few friends of mine, we sort of have the same interest, had an interesting speculation that the little ball of light that might be reported might be this thing coming, from something else, like maybe it's, of another world or dimension or something, but that's another route to go.
Rick, but any reports of it attacking anybody?
No reports. Okay. The closest thing to that was a few people that, were just scared by it as they saw it approaching because they thought it was going to land on them or pick them up or something.
Sure.
But it's just like it swoops down and it might check you out and it goes on about its business.
Well, what I find interesting about the pinpoint of light is that there are some other avian anomalies, like the ropen and the dua, that are found in the Solomon Islands near Papua New Guinea, that are allegedly bioluminescent, featherless birds that swoop down on people. So bioluminescence is not entirely out of the question with this creature. Perhaps it's not reflecting. Perhaps it's emitting light.
Oh, that's very interesting. And thank you, Rick, by the way. So tell me about bioluminescence, because usually we only associate that with fish.
Absolutely. Usually it's only found in marine animals. But for some reason, and there's no real, there's theories such as it might attract mates or it might attract prey, but these birds, these bird-like creatures, also known as, well, ropen is literally translated into demon flyer, that lives on the small islands of Rambunzo and Umbwa in the Bismarck Archipelago near Papua New Guinea. They are reported mostly by missionaries, Christian missionaries, who say they swoop down and attack funeral parties, taking the corpse from the coffin, so they're scavenger-type creatures.
Whoa.
And they might, you know, use this bioluminescence to warn enemies or attract prey or mates. It's very difficult to say.
How about distract enemies?
That could also be it, because it's sort of enemies. Like Rick was saying, it might have an almost hypnotic effect.
Yeah, that freaked me out. And you're making those island names up, aren't you? They don't exist.
First off, I'm going to apologize if anyone out there is from there and I've viciously mispronounced it, but that, you know, it's the name of the islands.
Okay.
There's tons of islands in that region.
I'll trust you. Let's go east of the Rockies. Richard is hanging on for Rob Morphy of AmericanMonsters.com. Richard?
Yes.
Tell us about yours.
Thanks for taking my call. Anything large, really, at all. It's actually when I was a teenager several years back, I was at a summer camp in New Mexico, and I was just walking through the woods, actually on the side of a mountain, and walked in between a couple of trees, and ended up walking through a spider web. And as you always do when you walk through a spider web, I brushed it off and turned around and saw a spider dropping down in front of me to the ground that was the largest spider I've ever seen in my life. And
how big would you say?
If you put your wrist together, like if your hand cupped or something, so your fingers facing opposite directions.
Right.
Its legs were long and spindly, but each leg would probably reach to a fingertip.
Okay, that's big enough.
Its abdomen, its rear end section was probably about as big around as a silver dollar. With what you call the head being a little bit smaller than that. And it just dropped to the ground and crawled away into some brush. And needless to say, it's terrified me for a second, really surprised me. And I've looked around a handful of places all over the internet. I haven't been able to find any other reports of it. And I'm wondering if anybody else has seen them, or also if you've heard of any of it, or if you could suggest some place to look and try and research it.
Well, I have never heard of anything like that, and I'm by no means an arachnid expert, but this kind of brings me to one of the purposes of the website. Please send us an email giving us the description you just did, and anyone else out there who has seen anything that they can't quite explain, bring it to us, and we'll do our best to research it for you and put you into contact with other people that may help you or know a little more than we do or you do. And that's kind of one of the main purposes of the site.
And for anybody else listening, probably one of the more interesting things about it, it was the grayish white. It had kind of modeling like other orb weaver spiders. And
I think that's Richard, and I hope you take Rob up on that offer, because I think it'd be great to have kind of a research partner on this, especially as you've expressed frustration over the internet. And who knows who we might be able to hook you up with. And try to jot down when you write, either you, Richard, or anybody listening. And thanks for calling, Richard. As many details as you can remember, time, place, and description of the particular beast, who knows how that might tie in. It brings up an interesting point, though, to Rob, because he said at the very beginning there about size, and most of the creatures that we talk about, these unknown animals or cryptids, they're mostly big and kind of attention-getting, but it would make you think about the little ones that people wouldn't pay that much attention to.
That's true.
And not that they're, they're not as obviously as deadly or as threatening as something that's large and unknown. But, you know, a spider, a small snake, anything, any of these could be just as deadly, just depending on the circumstances. Let's go west of the Rockies. Lee is hanging on for Rob Morphy of AmericanMonsters.com. Lee?
Hello, Ian.
Good evening.
How are you tonight?
Oh, I'm so looking forward to what you have to say.
Long-time listener, Art Bell and George, and been on the phone a couple of times. But anyway, hope you're doing, both of you, you and your guests are doing fine. But
thank you.
I have two things to say. And one of them was, 2 summers ago, I was in the Los Angeles forest with a couple of friends. We were camping out overnight, and I decided, it was a moonlit night, and I was walking down a path and decided to go for a walk, and was walking down a dark, moonlitted path. And I heard something growl at me, and I thought from behind the trees it was a bear. And immediately I just stopped in my tracks, and then I looked over in between two trees, it kind of lit up, and it looked like it was half man and half pig. And it was almost luminescent. And what I'm wondering, because I listen to the show every night, I'm nocturnal, I listen to the show every night, and I'm wondering if these aren't paranormal-type beings that can shapeshift or disappear.
That's certainly a possibility, and I'm open to the possibility of just about anything. I mean, if there's one thing that you learn about the world, the more time you spend in it, is that anything is possible, and as soon as you insist that something isn't, you're going to be disproven. Now, I personally focus my studies on creatures that I really think are ground in the zoological reality that we live in, but it doesn't mean that there aren't some paranormal elements, especially in cases like the Mothman. Now, as far as human pig hybrid goes, I haven't heard about anything like that, but again, I'd be obliged to help you research. So for everyone out there, again, we have a sightings section that's right on our homepage, right in the top left corner. You can't miss it. Just click on that and fill out the report, and we'd be obliged to help you guys in any way possible. It's a fascinating thing, this hybrid creature you're speaking of, but I've just never heard of anything quite like it.
This was in Los Angeles, I believe is what he said.
It was in the Los Angeles forest, and it was about 6 or 7 feet tall, standing between two trees, and it kind of lit up. And I took off running, and I ran about 20, 30 feet and stopped, and I heard it growling. And when I ran, and then all of a sudden I didn't hear any growling, turned around, and it was just gone.
Well, Los Angeles, it could be part of the movie business. So
it was way up in the forest.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, it might have a future then as a film executive. And thank you very much, Lee. I appreciate that. Let's go to first time caller line. Aaron is hanging on for Rob Morphy of AmericanMonsters.com. Aaron?
Oh, hello. Am I on?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Oh, great. Hello, Ian and Rob. I love your website. I think it's probably one of the best cryptozoology websites there are. And I'm a big fan of cryptozoology. My question is, in 2004 in New Guinea, there was, I don't know what it was. It was this big, I don't know, reptile, dinosaur creature.
I know what you're talking about.
Description. I'm sorry.
I said I know what you're talking about. It's one of my favorite accounts.
Yes. Right. It had a long. It was like a bipedal dinosaur creature. It had like the tail of a crocodile, and head of a dog. I don't know what it could be. Could it be the furry?
Let's find out, Aaron. Hang on a second. Would you tell us what you know about it, Rob?
Well, I don't know much more than Aaron does, but I know in March of 2004, ABC World News reported that in the Papua New Guinea province of East New Britain, police armed with M16s went in search of what they considered to be a 12-foot-tall, grayscale, Tyrannosaurus-like creature. And it, just like Aaron said, it was said to have a canine-like face, a crocodilian tail, and one of the eyewitnesses, let's see here, I have a little information, Christine Samai, told reporters that she ran after seeing the 3-meter-tall gray creature, and she claimed that it was as fat as a 900-liter water tank. The posse didn't find it, but they said they were going to continue their pursuit, and much like so many of these cases, sadly, there are no follow-up reports. Mm. It's picked up by the wires, and everyone hears about it, and then you just never hear about it again. But it's fascinating. And this is also worth noting. There's another creature there, possibly the same one, which locals call Murray, that lives in Lake Murray, and it's in our formerly extinct section. But anyone that wants to look up that monster, Murray, or any other, can go right to our search engine, and it'll take you right to it. And they say it's a Tyrannosaurus Rex-like creature that lives in this lake. So it's not... Papua New Guinea is famous for these creatures.
I think Murray's a bad name.
Yeah, I agree too. It's somebody's grandfather and not the vicious dinosaur you want to track down.
Phil the Monster just doesn't work for me quite the same way. All right, well, you can tell it's just getting weird, and we're not out of the woods yet, figuratively or literally, as these stories are going with AmericanMonsters.com next on Coast to Coast AM. Rob Morphy from AmericanMonsters.com has been taking questions, and we'll get a bunch more coming up here. We'll go to the wildcard line for Rusty in just a moment. And a reminder, too, that AmericanMonsters.com isn't just a site that has photos of many of the most famous cryptozoological finds or pursuits, but also is looking to be a part of the process for the future. So even if you don't get through on the phones tonight, you can still email to Rob, send in whatever photos you might have, and look at him and his colleagues as your colleagues in pursuit of this information. Rusty is on the wildcard line for Rob Morphy of AmericanMonsters.com. Rusty, thank you for being patient.
Hi, Ian. Love the show. New listener.
Glad to have you.
I was wanting to hear, know if your guest has ever heard of any of the things from the West Virginia and the New River.
No. I'd love to hear about it, though.
Isn't that part of the Mothman area?
Yeah.
Okay, but what were you thinking of specifically?
I've heard stories from the older people where I grew up at about things they've pulled out of the river and things they've seen that they couldn't identify. One guy was talking about a giant-like turtle. And there's parts of the river that are over a mile deep.
Huh. Well, there's definitely accounts of giant turtles dating back to ancient times. And even in the United States, I think in upstate New York and I believe Upton Lake, there's a legend of a giant turtle living in there. And I know there's at least a dozen more throughout the United States.
Define giant, Rob.
Well, there's differences. In freshwater terms, it could be anything to like 12 to maybe 15 feet. And in the ocean, there's been reliable reports of sea turtles up to 30 feet long from tip of the head to back of the shell or the tail. I mean, monstrous creatures in the very literal sense of the term.
Is that what you were thinking of a little bit, Rusty?
Yes, and also when I was growing up, there was a car that ran into a lake, and two divers went down to get it. One of them was a special forces guy, and they came out of the lake, and they never go back in again because of something they seen down there. They said it was bigger than the car.
Was that a turtle as well?
They didn't say, but they said it wasn't a fish.
Wow. That reminds me of another case in Crescent Lake, which is in Newfoundland, I believe. And they say there are gigantic, monstrous eels, much like the ones being seen in Australia, and that divers that have gone in, you know, on retrieval missions have been, you know, attacked by these things and have absolutely refused to go back in.
Thank you, Rusty. Interesting. And whatever you discover or whatever you think you've heard from other people, send that in and just have it be part of the archive of information at AmericanMonsters.com. Let's go east of the Rockies where Steele is standing by. Steele?
Yes. Yes, I'm Steele, Aurora, Indiana.
Glad to have you.
Well, what I saw wasn't exactly, you know, monstrous and huge, but it was something that I had never seen anything like it before or since. I was like cleaning up behind a garage, and I really wasn't thinking about much, and I was just thinking of my daughter Sabrina that I haven't seen for years. But I turned over a piece of roofing,
right?
And there was something that looked like an ant, kind of. It was 3/4 of an inch or longer, furry, with I believe it was orange and black stripes, and like big antenna that were, and its legs and its whole body was furry.
Now, what did you do with something like that? Did you attempt to capture it?
No, because not too far from it was a black widow, and I kind of got away from both.
Yikes. Yeah, I don't blame you for getting away from the black widow. I mean, that's the kind of thing that would really be worth capturing and then calling your local Indiana University Extension office or something, you know, some county extension office, and trying to see what they think it is. Because sometimes, and thank you, Steele, for the question. Sometimes, Rob, it isn't just that the species may not be, you know, unknown. It's just unknown in that area.
Absolutely.
for whatever reason, something has moved into a new territory, and that's why it's so unfamiliar.
That's definitely a large part of cryptozoology, an animal such as a kangaroo being seen in the wilds of Wisconsin,
right,
or those giant panthers that are all the time being reported in Great Britain. These aren't unknown animals, of course, but they're just unknown to the region, and that's what makes it anomalous and therefore fitting under the umbrella of cryptozoology.
Right. You know what? Another question out of this might be, do you have a category yet, since this is the way some of the questions have already gone, of crypto insects?
You know, we don't specifically, and we have 13 distinct categories that, you know, where our ideas of how to best break down the different subsections of unidentified creatures. This probably would go under our unclassified, which is the broadest spectrum.
Okay. Monty, west of the Rockies, for Rob of AmericanMonsters.com. Monty? Oh, did he drop? Let me go to Mark, who's standing by on the wild card line before we go to break. Mark, you're talking with Rob of AmericanMonsters.com.
Yes. Good evening, and thank you, gentlemen, both for letting me get on the air. I just have two quick questions.
Okay.
With the recent studies on the whole Bigfoot and grabbing the two goats out in the mountains, I was wondering why there hasn't been any, like, Bigfoot attacks with other animals.
Okay.
Well, there are reported Bigfoot attacks, especially in the eastern section of the United States, where the Bigfoot-type creatures are known to be a lot more aggressive. Lauren Coleman's written extensively on the subject. He's perhaps the preeminent cryptozoologist of our age. And so even though they aren't as commonly published as the more gentle and brief encounters with Sasquatch or Bigfoot, there's definitely plenty in the annals of cryptozoology where ape-like creatures have attacked humans and animals.
Okay. Mark, you got a second question?
Yes. I was wondering what Rob's take was on, like, all the animals around here seem to be acting strange. They've been more skittish. Their migration patterns are different.
Could you tell me where around here is again?
New York, sir.
Right on. Now, that I'm not familiar with. I mean, that could be a lot of different things. I've heard, of course, reports of how animals react before a natural disaster. I'm not sure if that's technically cryptozoological, and yeah. I really don't know, but it's certainly fascinating and
you mean around
for the research.
New York City area or New York State?
Upstate New York.
Upstate New York.
Adirondacks.
Okay. I hadn't heard anything about that either. Maybe other
How
people.
How do you mean skittish?
Like, we've had, like, a large migration of white geese this year. The dogs are always howling, and the koi dog population, like, tripled this year.
You know, I don't know if this ties into this at all, but in Minnesota, one of the big stories of the last year or so for birders has been the shift in migratory birds or non-native birds, which are only seen rarely in Minnesota, which have been seen in droves. One of which, even a story that made NBC Nightly News a couple of months ago about the owl population. And whereas it used to be that you might see, if you went out at night and you knew where to look, you might see, you know, an owl here or there, like a large owl here or there. And in Minnesota this year, it's like you could see three in one tree in certain parts of the state. And so I wonder whether some of this might have to do with the weather, the shift in the weather patterns, or in the food population that that especially for certain types of birds, it forced a change in where they would usually go. Again, send in your questions and let's see what Rob Morphy can do at AmericanMonsters.com. We'll come back. We'll get a lot more questions. The phones are lined up for him, and we'll get to everybody that we can. What have you seen? What do you have photos of? What creatures have you been dying for an update on, such as it exists? We'll get it coming up next, and we'll do it on Coast to Coast AM. My name's Ian Punnett. We shouldn't be surprised that so many people responded on the phones right away to a previous caller's question about an ant, or it would look like a giant ant, about 3/4 of an inch, orange stripes, and he found it when he was lifting up some roofing behind a garage. And Rob Morphy of AmericanMonsters.com, some people have called to say that that sounds like a cow ant. And I don't know anything about it, but if there were to be such a thing as a cow ant, you would think it probably would be in Indiana where they've got lots of cows.
But that's a great example of how the internet and this mass communication helps.
Right.
Instantly, there are at least potential answers.
Right.
And that's great.
Now the question is it an ant that's as big as a cow or an ant that could pick up a cow? Which
Either one would scare the heck out of me.
Clear up the legend. Let's go first time caller line where Craig is standing by for Rob Morphy of AmericanMonsters.com. Craig?
Yeah, hello.
Hey.
I was just calling to say my grandpa was down in New Guinea in World War II, and he came across, it had a web, and it was a spider, and it scared him so much he hacked it up with his machete. And apparently it was about 3 feet long.
Get out.
Wow.
Get out.
From tip to tip. And I said, no, that's impossible. It was furry like a bird spider, right? He said, no, it was shiny emerald green.
Wow. That's certainly monstrous and horrifying.
Yeah. Now, he wasn't just saying that to scare you.
He's never lied in his life, you know, and not that I'm aware of. And he gave me he's still alive. He's given me a lot of details. I know it was near Point Moresby, which is, I guess, the biggest city there. And I guess come to find out, Urianjaya is the second largest island in the world. And even today with GPS, I don't know if it's totally charted. And it seems like when everybody starts talking about cryptozoology, New Guinea seems to pop up.
Yeah, that's true.
It's certainly a hotbed, definitely.
Yeah, that's a good point. Thank you, Craig. That's very interesting. And,
you know, I've taken extensive notes on that, or as extensive as you just gave. Please send an email, and I'll look into it for you personally and see if I can dig up anything. Certainly, tropical insects and arachnids are huge, but a 3-foot, you know, spider is something that's almost beyond comprehension.
Cryptoarachnids, it's a new category.
No doubt. No doubt.
You got to get it started as soon as you get photos. Let's go to the wildcard line. Maggie is being very patient for Rob Morphy of AmericanMonsters.com. Maggie?
Yes. Yeah. How you doing?
Evening.
Growing up, my father was born and raised in Puerto Rico, and I was growing up with the stories of the Chupacabra.
Sure.
And, you know, I've heard stories of attacks in the United States and things like that, and I was wondering if there was any, you know, further research on that, like maybe some parasite or something.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. You're the first one to bring up a chupacabra, and I was kind of looking for that on your website too, Rob.
You know, we've got a big article coming up. I mean, obviously there's some holes in the articles because I'm essentially writing them all myself, but I have a huge, huge article coming up on chupacabra because it's one of the most, you know, highly regarded cryptids, at least one of the most fascinating by most people's standards.
Maggie, did your father ever tell you of having seen one himself?
He never saw one himself. He said he had seen cattle that was mutilated by them.
Right.
And, you know, they were just, you know, completely drained. And he said it was really horrifying.
Where would they live in Puerto Rico?
He lived in Ensenada.
But where would the chupacabras live in Puerto Rico? Where did he give an idea of where did they come down from?
No, they never really had an idea where they came from.
Okay.
And a lot of it, like, is superstition-based, but my father swore, you know, these things existed. And I've heard other stories of people, you know, that said they have seen them.
Yeah, with stories abound. I look forward to that article, too, coming up then on AmericanMonsters.com. Let's go east of the Rockies for Brad on Coast to Coast AM for Rob Morphy. Go ahead, Brad.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Terrific, thank you.
I just wanted to say real quick, Ian, big fan of you.
God bless you.
I work every Saturday night, and I always look forward to the show.
Thank you.
This is something I have been, it's real weird, but I've been a hermit crab owner and collector since about 1993. I've actually got one still alive from that year. But every year I take a trip down to the Florida Keys, mainly to Key West, because there's a lot of them there wild on the beach.
Right.
And so I go down, I check them out, I take pictures for my blog. Well, I was down there a couple, 3 weeks ago, and I saw one that, you know, looks normal, real big.
Right.
It was probably softball size. I pick it up, and it's real shy. You know, it wouldn't even peek out, really, for me when I was holding it.
You mean out of the conch shell?
it just doesn't like to expose
right.
itself.
I right. They curl into the – you're talking about when they curl back into the shell?
Yeah, and then right. they're, you know, real shy, real nervous.
Right.
And, well, I set him back down, and I moved on because I saw about five of them on a piece of fruit and, you know, just going nuts. Well, when I glanced over, I saw the one that I had recently picked up, and he was walking, and I didn't think nothing of it. But then he hops and actually wings emerge from this shell, and he kind of glides about 6 to 7 feet down the beach.
Get
he
out.
Does this about three more times and then walks. Keeps walking into the tide. Then I didn't see him anymore.
Well, I've never heard of that.
Like I said, since 93, and I had never heard of any crustacean with wings.
Well, especially with a shell, because, I mean, those things, I mean, for it to be softball size, to have a shell that
big. Very, very heavy hermit crab. I
mean,
I've had several big ones and none compared to this one.
This might be just a case of spontaneous evolution. Just where a creature adapts to an essential element of its environment, and
yeah.
and it might be a single anomaly, or it might be a trend that will continue, but it's certainly fascinating, one I plan on looking into. That's really
way
great.
Interesting.
Well,
that's
I did
story.
Actually manage to snap a picture of it. I haven't got those uploaded onto my computer yet, but once I do, I can drop Coast to Coast AM a line.
Oh, please.
And get those on the website for you.
Oh, I would love that at Coast to Coast AM, and I know that... that Rob would be very interested over there at AmericanMonsters.com,
Please
too.
Send them to American Monsters as well. I'd really appreciate it.
That's
no problem.
Great,
I don't
Brad.
Want to keep you guys up. I know there's a lot of people waiting. Thanks for taking my
I
call.
I love that.
Keep up the good work. Thank you.
I was just fiddling with some hermit crabs a couple of weeks ago in South Carolina near Beaufort, and we were at low tide, and we were picking them up, and we were looking. It would freak me out and start
it
flying.
It would astound me, stagger me.
My wife would still be up on my shoulders if it did that. Terry is on the wild card line for Rob Morphy of AmericanMonsters.com. Terry?
Hi, Ian. Hi,
evening.
Rob. How are you doing tonight?
Very well, thank you.
It's nice to finally get through to you, Ian.
Thank you.
Just as a matter of note, your first guest that was talking about all the strange markings and stuff
right.
sent you an email with a link to a rock here in western North Carolina called Judicala Rock that actually has a six-fingered gigantic handprint from what the Cherokees used to call a six-fingered giant that roamed these mountains. But anyway, that's besides the point. Actually, I was going to ask about the chupacabra thing too.
Right, the goat sucker, the big
yeah. But the other caller beat me to it, and I was going to ask your guest if you were to ever capture one of these, say Bigfoot. Has anybody thought about, you know, what it would do to the creature? I mean, as far as it being terrorized while it's being tested, even if it's going to be released.
Absolutely. It's certainly one of the biggest parts of the controversy. I mean, they're generally regarded as being very intelligent beings. And to make one suffer unduly is, of course, not what anybody wants, really. Anybody that's genuinely concerned about the discovery and care for one of these creatures. So, yeah, I know that's one of the major factors in the capture versus kill, you know, philosophy, and also the let nature be versus capture and kill philosophies.
Right. I wonder, and thank you, Terry, for that interesting observation. You got to figure that if something like that did happen, in light of the number of lawyers who have come forward to be representatives of animals, how quickly a Bigfoot would have representation. And if it were a hominid, then in what, how would it be represented? I mean, it would end up, you would think, having human rights. But we'll just hang out there for the time being and return to it. Bob and everybody else hanging on the phones, we'll come back to you. We'll give you all the numbers. We'd love to see what you saw. Tell us your story of your crypto animal next on Coast to Coast AM. My name's Ian Punnett.